Fourth parak of Avos, Mishneh Vav, Rabbi Yishmael Omer, or Rabbi Yishmael Beno Omer, different gersois, Halomed Amanas Lamed, if someone learns Torah with the intent on condition to teach, Maspikin Biyado Lomod Ulalamed, so he has the wherewithal to learn and to teach. V'halomed Amanas Lasos, but if one learns with the intent of doing, then he'll have the ability not only to learn and teach, but also to guard and do as well. So right away, Rabbeinu Yehuda points out, does that mean to say that Halomid Amanas Lamid has no intent of La'asos? Chas v'shalom, he says. Chas v'shalom, we're not talking about someone who wants to learn and not do the mitzvahs that he's learning about. Because if a person learns and has no intent of doing the mitzvahs, ein maspikin biyado lo lilmod v'lo lamed v'lo la'asos. So, what does it mean? Lo lamed amanas la'asos. Everyone is lo lamed amanas la'asos. El amanas la'asos iser v'heter. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that. Is he going to put effort into delving into what he's learning, or he's just trying to learn the basics and he'll do what he learns about, but he's not going to matriach to find new understandings and expand his horizon beyond what he has. So Mamela, if he's just learning for a limited understanding, that's all he'll have. But if he learns Amanas Lasos, that means he wants to understand the truth of what he's learning, where it comes from, the origins, what can be derived from it. So then, it's amanas lasos, then everything will come with it. So no one's learning Torah, not amanas lasos. That's impossible. That's not learning. If someone was learning Torah with no intent to do what he's learning, that's not called learning at all. And we find a concept that even though a person is, when a person is involved in a mitzvah, he doesn't stop to do another mitzvah. Ha'oisik b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. But when a person learns Torah and a mitzvah comes his way, he does stop his learning to do the mitzvah. At least if it's a mitzvah no one else can do. The question is, why not? If you say that ha'oisik b'mitzvah is patur min ha'mitzvah, then he's learning Torah, that's a mitzvah, so he should be part from all other mitzvahs. And the answer is no, because when you're learning amas lasos, you're always learning to do what the mitzvahs. If you're not going to do the mitzvahs, then your Torah is not Torah in the first place. So you're always learning to do the mitzvahs. So it's almost like a condition in the Talmud Torah that I'm going to interrupt to do mitzvahs. That's why we learn Torah. We learn Torah to do mitzvahs. And it's always amanas lasos. So the difference of Rabbeinu Yonah says is the lomid amanas lamed is talking about someone who is going to do everything he's learning, there's no question. But he's not going to be me'ayin harbe, he's not going to analyze to expand beyond what's in front of him, as opposed to lomid amanas lasos, so he gets to the core and the root of what's going on and understands everything that comes from it and can expand on the simple halacha beyond what is black and white in front of him. So if a person is lomid amanas lamed, which includes lasos, of course, but not to expand on it, so maspikin biyad lomid lamed. But if a person is lomid amanas lasos, then maspikin biyad lomid lamed lishma v'lasos. Fine. So there's a question on this Mishnah. And the question is like this. There's either the person who's learning to teach, or the person who's learning to do. And of course, Rabbeinu Yonah says, everyone is learning to do. The question is, how far are you going to take your learning? Isn't there a third category of the lomed amanas lilmod? I'm learning for the sake of learning. And of course, I will do what I learn. But not that I'm learning to teach. What I'm learning, to learn. The most basic level. He's learning to learn. He's learning. Why are you learning? Because it's a mitzvah on Torah. Without any amanas. Without an amanas to lamed and not the amanas lasos, I'm learning to learn. Because again, everyone is going to do what they're learning. That's a given. So why is that missing from the Mishnah? And Rashi Zichron of Weinberg would say, because there's no such thing. The same way we said that learning without the intent to do what you're learning is not learning at all. To learn Torah and not intend to keep it, to learn Torah as a subject. That's what the Yevanim wanted out of the Yidden, to learn as a subject. Nothing to do with practical life. That's not Torah. B'schal, that's not Torah. So Rishiv Zichron Baruch would say, there's no such thing as to be lomed amanas l'lmod either. If you're learning Torah in the true way of learning Torah, then you have to be l'lamed. That's the minimum. And to learn just for learning doesn't exist. And there's a fascinating point in the Rambam to be made, that the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah, starts that women and children are part of Talmud Torah. But a child, a father has to teach Torah. Like it says, Ulamatam Samas Benechim Adabebam. Whereas a woman does not have this obligation. And then the Rambam says, the same way a person is obligated to teach his son, so too he's obligated to teach his grandson. Like it says, V'hadatem Levanecha Ulevnei Vanecha. And then the Rambam says, not only is he obligated to teach his son and a grandson, Ela mitzvah kol chacham v'chacham Yisrael, Allah is called Talmidim, al pisha einam banav. There's a mitzvah in every chacham from Yisrael to teach Talmidim, even if they're not his children, like it says, V'shinatim levanecha. Elo ha-Talmidim. So the Rambam begins with his Talmud Torah, that women and children are part from Talmud Torah on their own. A child is part of Talmud Torah on his own, but the parent has an obligation. The father has an obligation to teach him Torah, and he has an obligation to teach his grandson. And any chacham in Yisrael has an obligation to teach the Torah he knows to Talmidim. What's odd is the Rambam didn't begin with the halacha that there's a mitzvah to learn Torah. He waits until halacha ches to say, Kol ish mi Yisrael chayav b'talmud Torah, ben ani, ben asher, ben shalom aguvim, ben yisurin, ben bachar, ben shayzak and gadol. Every yid, every Jewish man has the mitzvah to learn Torah, whether he's poor or rich or healthy or sick or young or old. Makes no difference. He has to learn Torah. Shouldn't that have been the first halach in Talmud Torah? Hilchos Talmud Torah, there's a mitzvah to learn Torah. Kol ish mi yisrael chayav b'talmud Torah. I mean, that's how you start with Hilchos Kriyishma. You say Kriyishma twice a day. Shach b'chol kamecha. Hilchos Trila. Everyone's chayav to daven every day. You start the halachas by telling me the simple obligation. So you should start Hilchos Talmud Torah chayav kol ish mi yisrael to learn Torah. The Ram waits till halacha ches. Halacha Aleph and Beis, a man is obligated to teach his child Torah. A man is obligated to teach his grandchild Torah. A man who knows Torah has to teach Torah even if it's not his children. Teaching Torah is what the Rambam starts with. Hilchos Talmud Torah begins with teach Torah. And it's interesting, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam, he writes the Mitzvah Talmud Torah, Lilmud Lamda. He says straight out, in the Mitzvah Talmud Torah, to learn and to teach. Because ultimately, there is no Talmud Torah without teaching Torah. Teaching Torah is an integral part of learning Torah. There's no option of Lilmud to Lilmud. Lilmud Amanas Lamed is the bare bones. There's no such thing as Lilmud for the sake of Lilmud. I think there's a point in the Gemara that bears this out. There's a well-known Chazal, when it came to the mitzvah of Hakel, and all the men, women, and children came to hear Motzei Shviyas, the Yom Tov of Sukkos, to hear the Torah. And we all know the Chazal, why do the men come to Hakel? The Gemara says, Lilmo, to learn. Why do the women come to Hakel? The Gemara says, Lishmaya, to listen. And why do the little children come to Hakel? The Gemara says, to give schar to those who bring them. Right? Familiar with that Chazal? Pretty well known Chazal. So it always bothered me. Why does it say men come to learn and women come to listen? Women are coming to learn too. The same way the men are coming to learn, the women are coming to learn. What does it mean that women are coming to listen? Isn't that learning Torah? They come to hear a shir, so you're learning Torah. What does it mean? The nashim coming lishmaya and not lilmo. The men are coming lilmo, the women come lishmaya. Aren't you doing the same thing? And I believe the explanation is what we're saying. Lilmod, by definition, means I'm going to teach over what I'm learning. Lishmaya is when I come to listen to Torah and I'm not going to teach it afterwards to anyone else. That's not called lilma, that's called the shmaya. The men are going to listen and they're going to teach it, so that's lilmoid. The women are coming to listen and integrate it and to apply it, but they're not necessarily going to teach it. So that's lishmaya. Lilmod by definition is telalamed. Lilmod amanas telalamed is the minimum. Otherwise, it's not even called lilmod. There's no such thing as lilmod amanas lilmod. It's lilmod amanas telalamed. And that's why the Gemara says the men are coming lilmod, the women are coming lishmaya, because they're not going to have the schalim. And in fact, there's a rash in the Gemara Brochus. The Gemara says that the ikar reward for people who come to hear the drasha is the schar for going to the drasha. And Rashi says, why not schar for learning Torah at the drasha? And Rashi says, because unless you can repeat what you learned afterwards, you don't get the schar of learning. You get schar for going, but you don't get schar of learning. To get schar of learning, you have to be able to repeat what you heard afterwards. So you could understand it, it's a level of Havana, that unless you understand it well enough to repeat it, that's not called learning. But you could also say that beyond that, because that learning is, it's not just lishmaya. If you're just going to listen to it, that's lishmaya. You came to hear. But if you're going to repeat it afterwards, that's lilmud. So I believe this is the Peshat in the Tana, the Yeshiva said, lilmud amanas lilamed is the minimum of learning. Because by definition, when you learn Torah to share it, to spread it, to pass it on, to keep it going. It's not for me to keep for myself. Now, there are a number of questions. First of all, the concept that learning is in order to teach sounds contrary to an idea that has been put forward that learning Torah lishma is to learn Torah for the sake of learning Torah and no other reason. And there are Gedolei Yisrael who built their yeshivas on the concept that in this yeshiva we are not preparing Talmidim to be Rabbanim, we are not preparing Talmidim to be Rosh Yeshivas, we are learning Torah to be learning Torah. That's what we do in this yeshiva. We learn Torah for the sake of Torah, and they should be great in Torah, they should be Gedolei Torah. Doesn't mean they're going to be Rosh Yeshivas or Rebbeim. They're not learning as a vehicle towards a goal. They are learning for the sake of learning. So, does that concept of the Shema run contrary to this Mishnah? And I think we have to explain that we're not, the concept of Limud Amas Lamed, which is the minimum of learning, doesn't mean you have to get a job as a Rav or a Magid Shir or a Rosh Hashiva. So again, the Rambam's wording is, every father has to teach his son. Every grandfather has to teach his grandson. Every chacham in Yisrael has to teach Talmidim, even if they're not his children. That means you have to share your Torah. Your Torah is not for you alone. When you learn Torah, it's to be shared. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to make a profession out of it. But it does mean you have to be willing to share your Torah. Whether that means with your chavrusa, whether that means with a small group called a chabura, whether it means you'll give a shir without getting paid for it in a shul or beis medrash once a week or every day or whatever it is, you have to share your Torah. Your Torah is not for yourself. It's not for yourself. And if you're not capable, some people write svarim to teach their Torah. But the point is, I don't think it's contrary. There's an ideal of learning Torah, lishma, for the sake of learning and no other reason. Fine. But by definition, you're not learning Torah to keep it to yourself. There's no such concept in the Chazal when they taught us what Torah is about. The Mishnah is telling us the minimum of learning is amanas lalamed. If it's not lalamed Torah, it's not learning Torah. Torah has to be lalamed. So the second question is, if that's the case, does that mean I should sacrifice my personal learning for the sake of teaching others? And this is a serious question. Does my ruchnius suffer to help someone else's ruchnius? When it comes to Torah, is the obligation to teach Torah supersede my obligation to learn Torah? What's the balance? And there's a concept that Gemara says, and I'm sure you're familiar with the terms. It's a concept of chayecha koidman. It's a concept that you come first. when there's a conflict of yourself versus someone else, so you come first, chayecha kaidman. And there's a Chassam Sofer that writes that this concept of chayecha kaidman, which Rabbi Akiva taught us, is only discussing physical things. The Gemara is discussing two people alone in a wilderness. Only one of them has water. If the one with the water shares, both will die of thirst. If the one with water keeps it for himself, he will survive, the other will perish. So does he keep it for himself and his friend perishes, or do they share it and they both perish? And Rabbi Akiva says, Chayecha kaidman, the person comes first. If it's his life or the other, he keeps the water for himself that he should survive. Says the Chaim Sofer, that's fine and good for Olam HaZedek things. But when it comes to Olam Haba, there's no such thing as Chayecha kaidman. When it comes to Olam Haba Zachin, when it comes to Olam Haba for Ruchnius, we don't say Chayecha kaidman. And Chaim Sofer has a lengthy explanation about Avraham Avinu, who is faced with this quandary. Does he sacrifice his personal growth to teach and to share with others? And he concluded that the Ribbono Shel Olam has enough angels in the world. He doesn't need more malachim. It's my job to take people and make them better. And he sacrificed his own personal growth for that, for the time to teach others with that concept in mind. And the Chassam Sofer says that the Ribbono Shel Olam, for this reason, calls Avram Ohavi, his beloved. He loves Avram Avinu for this reason. And Avram Avinu didn't lose out. Even though logically he should have fallen behind, he shouldn't have reached levels that would have taken much more time of his own, and he didn't have the time for it. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave it to him as a gift, so to speak, because he put in his effort to help others, so he didn't lose out. And Chassam Sofer uses this concept that anyone who has the opportunity to teach others and help others will not lose out. That's what you should do. Help others. Don't worry about your own ruchnius. Help others with their ruchnius. And the Ribbono Shel Olam will repay you, and you'll gain the ruchnius in a quicker amount of time than is ordinarily necessary, and so on. The person won't lose out. That's Chassam Sofer. So there's a tshuva from Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe disagrees unequivocally that there's no such thing. If the halach is chayecha kaidman by olam hazeh, there's a halach of chayecha kaidman by olam haba, there's no difference. When it comes to mitzvahs, we say chayecha kaidman. We don't say, if I have one kezayis of matzah and there's two people, I have one kezayis. My friend has no. If I eat it all myself, I get the mitzvah, gets nothing. So should I break it in half? Will each eat half his eyes? Chayecha kaidman, you eat the whole zayis. Instead of each, you eat half a zayis and each doing a partial mitzvah. You should do the whole mitzvah. Now it's true if you had two gezeisim, so then you'd give him one and you'd have one and you won't have the ma'av two gezeisim. And then gets shaz v'afi kaidman and first night, second night. These are all kinds of shaz they talk about. But we do say chayecha kaidman by ruchnis. We don't say that a person should lose out on ruchnis. We say chayecha kaidman. So Rav Moshe disagrees l'halocha with this Chaim Sofer, and he goes on to say that it does make sense that even though chayecha kaidman, there is a mitzvah of meiser, and that mitzvah of meiser can apply to time as well, and a person should give meiser of his man. A person should give a tenth of his time for others. So if someone is learning in yeshiva, and a weaker student would benefit from studying with this particular person, we would tell him, you should learn with him a little bit. Not the whole day, not even a whole Seder. But if you learn 10 hours a day, give him an hour. Give him an hour. Give him a tenth of your time. A ma'aser you should give. This is Rav Moshe's approach. And I believe many others have said the same. And this is a concept that many yeshivas try to employ, where they get the older bachim to learn with the younger bachim for an hour, half hour, whatever it is. The older bachim generally don't like it, but they're told this is a good thing to do, and it is a good thing to do. And it's not being selfish in your zman, even though during that time you could be doing something else. But no, it's like this, you give a ma'aser of your time. You share from what you learn, and learn with others. So the essence of Talmud Torah is l'lamed u'lamed, to learn without teaching is a chisaron in learning. That's not learning if it's not the lamed. And that's not to mean that you're not learning. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to learn to make a profession out of being a pedagogue. That's not the goal here. But the goal is that you understand that Torah is not meant to be kept for yourself. Torah is meant to be shared, to be spread. Habatzis Torah, to touch other people with your Torah. That's ultimately the purpose, and that's why the Rambam begins Hilchos Talmud Torah with teaching Torah, as opposed to the personal obligation to learn Torah. With that in mind, we have this concept that when a person learns, so he's going to, how much time does he allot to giving over Torah when it takes away from his own learning? So Rav Moshe says you have this cheshbon of giving meiser of your time in order to make sure that you are giving from, you're not learning exclusively for yourself, but at the same time, it shouldn't harm you in your personal growth, that a person will be able to grow. There's a story in the Gemara about Rabbi Preda. Rabbi Preda had a student, the way the Gemara describes it, who had a very great difficulty in grasping. And Rabbi Preda would teach him 400 times every halacha. And again, when the Gemara uses the term 400 times, we never know if it really is just an exaggeration, but certainly it was a lot. It was more than typical, and Rabbi Preda had tremendous patience, and he would teach him 400 times, or however many times it was, until he grasped it. One day, the Rabbi Preda had to leave to go to a mitzvah, so he taught his student, and he's getting ready to leave right after he taught his student. But the student didn't get it after 400 times. So Rabbi Preda said, what happened today that you didn't get the shiur? I did it 400 times like usual, and you didn't get it. So he says, well, when I heard that you have an appointment, that you're leaving after you learn with me, I thought you were going to leave early, and I couldn't concentrate. So therefore, I didn't get it. So Rabbi Preda said, okay, I'm not leaving until you get it. And he sat down and did another 400 times. So the Gemara says that a basko came out and said to Rabbi Preda, what you did was an amazing thing, and you're going to get tremendous schar. We could either give you 400 years added to your life, or you and your whole generation will be zeichet olam haba. So he said, I'll prefer the olam haba for me and my generation. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, fine, you get both. You get both. So the question is, when Rabbi Preda taught him 400 times, was that a tenth of his time or more than that? How much time did that take? So, you know, that's a question. But Rabbi Preda is the example of the idea of teaching to someone else until they get it and having the patience for it and making sure that they understand. Now, everyone talks about Preda. I've seen it brought, and I myself have wondered, who was the Talmud who would sit there for 400 times? You know, it's one thing that the Rebbe has the patience, but how many students would have the patience to sit 400 times till they can get it? That's probably even greater than Rabbi Preda himself, that the Talmud was willing to sit that long until it sunk in, until he was able to understand what he was learning. So we have the Mishnah telling us that if a person is loymed amanas lalamed, which is the minimum, to learn, to understand, to teach, so them as speaking beyad the lumud lalamed, he'll have the ability to do just that. He'll learn and he'll teach. But if he's loymed amanas laasais, then he gets everything. So this amanas laasais, if a person, the way Rabbeinu Yonah says it, is going to inquire and understand and extrapolate, so then he has everything. All the milas are there. The learning, the teaching, the keeping and the doing and so on. When a person learns something, very often there's a gap. There's some kind of disconnect between what you're learning and actually doing. We're not dealing with people who learn as a theoretical, intellectual pursuit. We're dealing with people who talk about Erlicha people. They learn, they want to do. But it's very often that we learn something and somehow we don't act on what we learn immediately. I'll give you an example. There's a halacha that in the morning you're supposed to wash tefillah yadayim. When you wake up in the morning, you wash tefillah yadayim. You say modani, you wash tefillah yadayim. And there are some sfarim that bring that person should wash his hands right by his bed. Person should not walk Dalet Amos for water. The Mishnah Berurah says the reason why people are lenient is because we'll say the whole house is Dalet Amos. Your whole house is Dalet Amos, so you can't leave your house, but within your house, it's Dalet Amos. But if you're sleeping outside, certainly you have water right next to you. And if you remember the Navi, Sefer Shmuel Aleph, when David HaMelech is being pursued by Shaul, on one occasion, Shaul is coming with an army, and David hears about it, and Shaul and his men sleep for the night, and the Navi says that Shaul is in the middle of the circle, and Avner is next to him, and then there are circles and circles of soldiers around Shaul and Avner, and that way, anyone who's trying to come into the camp will have to get through all the soldiers till they get to Shaul. And David sees this from a distance, and he goes down to where Shaul is sleeping. And the Navi says, Ribbono Shel Olam made a special tardema. They all went into deep slumber. No one woke up. And David took from Shaul two things. What did he take from Shaul, the sleeping Shaul? Took his spear and his water, a canteen. So I saw it brought in a sefer. Why did Shaul have a canteen by his bed? Some people think, you know, they have a bottle of water by your bed, you make it in the middle of the night. They have all kinds of shilas, kind of make a shakel, wash my hands. Shaul had water by his bed where he was sleeping because you have to wash negel vasa in the morning. What David HaMelech took was Shaul's spear and his negel vasa water. So it's all brought down. That's where he had water. So when you're sleeping outside, for sure you have negel vasa right by your bed where you're sleeping. And many people will wash their hands even at home in their beds, right by their bed. There are people who learn this and they don't wash their hands by their bed. Now, you could say, well, because the halacha, the Rashba says, Dalet Amos is fine. But really, in my mind, you're dealing with changing habits. Person, this is how he does it, and now you learn that's not how you should do it. So you have to change. And people are very hesitant to change. It's very easy to learn Amanas Lassos if everything you're learning is what you're doing already. When you're learning Amanas Lassos and the Lassos is not what you're doing yet, it can be very challenging. It can be very challenging. So sometimes we think of Balei Tshuva who are just beginning, and they have difficulties of picking up and doing things, but this is not just for Balei Tshuva. This is for everybody. These are people who can be from birth, and they learn something, and there's a resistance to change. It's like we're used to our inertia. We're going, we do what we do, and we're not interested in changing. And sometimes we gotta change. Sometimes we can't keep on doing what we've been doing. I don't know if any of you were there, but at one time in school, we're learning about Hilchos Brachos, and we just finished a section and talked about how if you put bread or bagels, you know, homemade bread croutons are hamotzi, and if you have large pieces in a soup, you have to make hamotzi on it. And then as a conclusion, Siyum, the class goes to the pizza shop and someone orders the soup with the bagels and doesn't make a mitzvah. I said, we just learned you have to make a mitzvah. And like, this just didn't connect. And like, we just learned this. what are you doing? So until now, you did one thing. That was wrong. Now let's do it the right way. Like, you become creatures of habit, and you can learn something, and you can know it, and it still remains intellectual. You have to put it to practice. It's not, you have to like break the habits of the things that we do when we learn that that's not really the way we're supposed to be doing. Sometimes there's machloikis, there's different opinions, that's something else. If there's machloikis, different opinions, and your family does it one way, your husband does it one way, it's fine. There are different ways to do things. Someone just asked me today, I don't know if you know the Beis Yehuda, they have a thing, they send home a sheet that includes halachas of Shabbos on it. Rabbi Newman prepares it, and I don't look at it, but almost every week someone comes to me with something he saw on that sheet. And someone came to me today and said, what's the halacha of pickles on Shabbos? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I saw on the sheet that you can take pickles that were left over at the Shabbos meal and put them back into the pickle jar. And I said, so what's wrong with that? So he said, well, he looked in two Sforim that said you're allowed to. So Newman was based, he wasn't making this up. He found out two very well-known halakha Sforim. But this person said, I remember hearing in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zichron Vracha that you're not supposed to put pickles back into a pickle jar. So after extracting from him the whole story, I wanted to hear the whole thing from him before I said anything. I said, I want you to know that when I was in yeshiva, learning these halachas, so the din is clear that the malacha of ma'abed, which is what we're talking about, the malacha of ma'abed, of tanning, does not apply to food. Ein ibud ba'oichlin. There is no tanning by food. However, the Chacham said, you can't do anything which looks like tanning, even with food. That's why we don't salt cucumbers and things like that. So, if the din is, there really is no tanning by food, but you can't do things that look like tanning, so doesn't it look like tanning when you put a pickle in a pickle jar? Because ultimately you're putting it back into the brine and it looks like pickling. So I believe it was aser. But all my chaverim in yeshiva said, no, this is ridiculous. There's no such thing. Everyone puts pickles back on the pickle jar, it should be fine. And I'm the only one who's saying that it's not fine. So we went together to a choshev rav, and I asked him. I said, Rabbi, are you allowed to put pickles back in the pickle jar on Shabbos? And all my chaverim were like smirking, expecting him to give me a clap over the head, like what kind of nonsense? And the Rebbe said, Rebbe Aaron Kotler said it's also. And my friend's jaws dropped open and they were all shocked. And I did some research and I found out Taka by Reb Schneer's family, they don't put pickles back in the pickle jar. If pickles come out on Shabbos, they stay out or you finish them, but they don't go back in the jar. And to me, that's what makes sense. So I told this person, you know, he heard B'Shem Moshe, I heard B'Shem Baron, that you don't put pickles back in the jar. The Svarim that say you're allowed to must hold that it doesn't look like pickling. And they must say, if it's a pickle already, it doesn't look like pickling to put in a brine. I don't understand why it isn't. To me, looking like pickle means you put something in a brine. Whether it itself is pickled yet or not shouldn't make a difference, but fine. I went to Rabbi Newman, told him the whole story, just let him know that he's fine, he's based on Sfarim that he's using, but there are those who disagree. In any event, if someone comes to this, you realize, you know, at least for me, this means you have to change. Until now, you put your pickles back in the jar, now you're not going to put your pickles back in the jar. It's something that has to be changed. And maybe you could say, okay, so what's the big deal already? You know, because you don't put your pickles back in the jar. This is not, I don't know if it's called a habit or an issue. So I'll tell you where it becomes an issue. And this is something that many B'nai Yeshiva grapple with. There is a minig among Hasidim that Hasidim do not sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres, they eat in the house, for sure at night, and by lunch, they'll go make kiddush in the sukkah, and after kiddush, go in the house and have the meal. There are many different reasons why this minig exists. The problem is, the Gemara says explicitly that one is supposed to sit in the sukkah in Shmini Atzeres. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens, one is supposed to sit in the sukkah shmirat teres. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, it's not the gay. In Eretz Yisrael, you sit in the house because shmirat teres is not sukkahs. Talk about the chutzlars. Chutzlars, you have 2 days yontif. The Shulchan Aruch says clearly, you sit in the sukkah on shmirat teres. I think Chabad sits in the sukkah. Lubavitch sits in the sukkah in shmirat teres. Maybe one of the two groups. Most Hasidim do not. And every year I have this issue with Balabatim who have these Hasidish minhagim, and I tell them, I don't care about the minig, you should sit in the sukkah, because that's what Shulchan Aruch says. And it's a struggle, because you know this is the minig, you know this is what the Zaydis did, they ate in the house, they're not in the sukkah. But the Shulchan Aruch says you have to sit in the sukkah. And when I say Bnei Yeshiva grapple, because Ben Yeshiva, you're faced with family minig versus Shulchan Aruch. So a fellow comes to me and he says, I have a problem, this past Sukkot. My whole family sits in the house in Shmini Atzeres, and my daughter and son-in-law are here, and my son-in-law eats in the Sukkot in Shmini Atzeres. Can we say that since the whole family is going to be in the house, it's for him a shtickl tsar to be in the Sukkot, and he and his wife should eat in the house with everyone else? And I said to him, absolutely not. All of you should sit in the Sukkot with him, because that's what Shulchan Aruch says, and that's what you should be doing. In the end, the family ate in the house, and he ate in the sukkah with his wife. And he said, it was a wonderful meal. It was like a honeymoon to themselves and the sukkah. To me, this is like one of those things, it's clear. If you learn it in the halacha, it says this way. So, of course, when it comes to minhagim, someone's going to argue back, minhag mevat halacha, and minig overrides, but it's such a difficult minig. The only basis that I could really find that I think is most people say basis for this minig was that in Europe it was so frigid and cold, to sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres might be a shaila bal tosef, that you're eating onto the midst of sukkah. But in our climate, when it's not sub-zero outside, so then it's not so bad, it's beautiful outside, we can sit in the sukkah, it's nothing like what was in Europe. And I think that's really where the minhag came from. It wasn't so much a minhag per se, but that's I think was the origin. And it does, I don't think it applies in the United States. In any event, it was Sukkot, and I was in the yeshiva in Baltimore, and Shmini Atzeres, the young elite who were on campus, went to the yeshiva's house of Weinberg, and he was going to talk and learning in the sukkah. Now, Rav Weinberg, Olav Shalom, was a direct descendant of all the Slonimer Rebbes. Not just the Slonim HaChosid. The Mishpachas Weinberg were the Rebbes. The Rebbes and Slonim were all Weinbergs until, I think, with Weinberg's generation, and then it moved over to the Nesiva Shalom, and it's not directly in the family. The way I heard it over is if Weinberg would have been the Rebbe, because he was a direct line, but he chose to be a non-Chosid, and therefore he gave up his rights to be Slonim HaRebbe. But he came from a very Hasidic upbringing. And we're sitting in the Sukkah in Shmini Atzeres. And I had a shtickl chutzpah, but I was close with the Shiva. So I said, Rebbe, does it bother you that you're in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres? So he smiled and he said, there are two things that he had to change from the minhagim of Slonim. He's going through Shulchan Aruch, and the very beginning of Shulchan Aruch says, in the morning you don't eat till you daven. In Slonim, everyone ate before they davened. But the Shulchan Aruch says you don't eat for your daven, so you do lilmud amas lasa, so you got to change. The halacha is you don't eat for davening. So I stopped eating before davening. And it doesn't bother me that I skip eating before davening. The very end of Shulchan Aruch is the halacha of Shmini Atzeres. And there it says, in Shmini Atzeres, you eat in the sukkah, not in the house. So I changed from slonim. Slonim, everyone eats in the house. And I eat in the sukkah, because that's what Shulchan Aruch says. But it bothers me. So that much he conceded. It bothers me. And to me, like, that's one of the things, like I said, Bnei Yeshiva grapple with this, because we know there was a minig, but the halacha is not that way. The halacha is you sit in the sukkah. So, Lilmud Amanas Lasos tells you that you got it, you learn it, you know it, you got to do it. You have to do it. That's the halacha. It's a very difficult minig to really explain in our time and day to justify eating eating in the house. Now again, this doesn't really apply to you. Women can eat where in the house to hoi sukkah. It's not an issue for women. But for men, this is one of the things. In my mind, limon amas lasos is being mekabel. If this is the halacha and you understand this halacha, then you can't separate that from your life. Then you have to live it. If this is what it is, then that's what it is. And if it's uncomfortable and it's different, so be it. But limon amas lasos, that's what you got to do. And if you're not sure if you understand it right, you'll ask and you'll inquire. And when you find out that is in fact right, so you got to do it. And I'm not saying it's a madrega. The first madrega is lamed. That's the basic madrega. It's a higher madrega, lasis. But ultimately, that's the goal. The goal is to integrate everything into our lives and to be capable of change and capable of connecting what we know to what we do. And it shouldn't be this disconnect between what we should be doing and what we are actually doing.